Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike. Can you really make a one-arm martini?
I can, yeah. I haven't done it in like since we shot that movie.
I wish we would have had like a setup here.
Yeah.
The one-handed martini.
Well, I'm actually glad you didn't.
We're back with the actor Adam Driver. Serious Eaters have enjoyed his performances on Girls, as well as in movies like Lincoln, Midnight Special, Inside Llewyn Davis, and Star Wars, The Force Awakens. You know, you've got three movies coming out that I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
That's a lot of movies, man. You must have been working really hard this last year.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, let's talk about like what life was like when you got out of Juilliard.
Life was good. That was good.
Did you not live the struggling actor waiting on tables life?
I did wait on tables, yeah, while I was at school, and I think a little bit afterwards. But as soon as I graduated, I was lucky enough to start working right away. One of my first jobs before school started was at this restaurant that I think is now closed called Aix-en-Provence.
Oh.
It was like on 96th and Broadway.
I know that restaurant.
Right.
In fact, this is another connection between Serious Eats and Adam Driver. Daniel Gritzer, Kenji's lieutenant, cooked at that restaurant.
Really? I didn't know. I'd never worked in a restaurant, let alone a fancy restaurant. So it took me a long time to kind of catch on what, like, you know, Gouda cheese was.
And
it's like it's not in a package that's pre-wrapped that you buy at the store. But they always kind of push me basically to the bar area. They're like, you shouldn't.
You look like you belong at the bar, dude.
Yeah. Away from the people who have money. But one of the people I waited on was Tony Kushner.
Really?
Yeah.
And is that how you got Angels in America?
No.
That's a separate thing.
No, separate thing. But I did work, I guess, to answer your question. I worked in like off-Broadway theater and things in TV here and there.
So you were working. But you, like, I don't know. I cannot imagine Adam Driver doing a Bounty commercial.
I didn't.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't a hidden Bounty commercial in your life.
Oh, probably. I mean, at the time, I totally would have. A Bounty commercial, no.
All right.
Kind of great, though.
So you did a lot of theater originally, initially,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I think many people coming out of Juilliard end up doing a lot of theater because there's probably more emphasis on theater in your Juilliard training than there is film training. How did Girls come about?
Girls came about, you know, just through an audition. I did not want to, along with the whole, I'm going to do theater when I graduate from Juilliard, is a lot of pride in that. I'm not going to do, you know, television or I'm an elitist prick. I just want to do theater. And I was doing a play at the time. I think it was Mrs. Warren's Profession with Cherry Jones and Sally Hawkins and Edward Hibbert and Mark Herlick.
So you have, you know, not a lot of people know this. You have some serious theater cred. I know you won't say that, but I can say it.
Okay. Yeah. I really enjoy the theater, I guess, and I worked in it a lot. And then I read this script and at the time was not really very into the plays and kind of didn't want to do it. And my agent was like, you should go in and read for this. And that was it. I went in and read for it. I met Lena and I think I was the first person they saw and came back a second time. And that was when we shot the pilot. I was doing another play called Man and Boy, a Terrence Rattigan play and with Frank Langella and some other great actors. And they took a night off from the theater and shot the pilot or my scenes in the pilot in one day. And then that was kind of it.
So you're doing this TV show, Girls. You're playing an out-of-work actor.
Yeah.
Who's kind of a jerk in some ways.
Sure.
Did you call upon your own experiences? Did you try to find the little kernels of Adam in the character? Or was it just an acting job?
I think it was a mixture. I think you can kind of say that with everything that you mm-hmm. do, that you always try to find how you relate to the character or people. And if you don't, things that you personal experience or from people that you know.
I mean,
I don't think that job was any different.
Right. That character did some things that caused my wife to go, whoa. Is that just come with the territory?
How do you mean?
Like, I mean, in terms of your, you know, whether you're playing an evil person or a person who is aberrant in some ways.
Right.
I guess that's part of being an actor, right? Is that people ask you to do things that you wouldn't ordinarily think about doing yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that must be part of the fun in a way.
Yeah, it's not me, it's a character. You know, it's the story you're telling, and if it makes sense for what the story is or whoever is leading the thing, that in that case Lena, and it, you kind of totally get what she's after. There's no rule book, you know, necessarily. It's whatever makes the story the clearest.
What do you look for in roles? You have played serious roles, comic roles, you know, from Angels in America to Girls to Inside Llewyn Davis. The breadth of your work, I mean, you have a lot of bandwidth, dude, I guess is what I'm saying.
Thanks.
Is there one thing you look for in a character when you think about playing a role or taking on a job?
No. I just look at the director first.
You know?
Yeah, it's a filmmaker's medium. If you get a chance to work with great directors, that's, for me, it's the starting point. Even if you don't necessarily understand the material at the beginning, I feel like there's something visual going on that does that work for you. But for me, for a film, it's a director's medium. So I look for me, the director comes first. If it's a play, the playwright in my mind is kind of the first priority.
So you've worked with an incredible array of directors, and you're not 75. You're still a young actor, and yet you've worked with Scorsese, Steven Spielberg. You're not really concerned with how famous the director is. You know, like Midnight Special is a great, great film that was directed by Jeff Nichols.
Yeah, brilliant director.
Talk a little bit about Midnight Special. To me, it was the first movie that really just, it just blew me away, like your performance.
Oh, thanks.
Trying to explain what it's about in two sentences is really hard.
Yeah.
It's about a kid with extraordinary powers and a cult in Texas and, you know, but anyway, what kind of relationship did you have with Jeff on that film?
Actually, initially a good friend of mine who actually shot the first season of Girls, this guy named Jody Lee Lipes, we were having a conversation one time, and he had just done this retreat where Jeff was kind of one of the counselor. This is the wrong term for it, but he was one of the directors that they'd hired who'd help these younger filmmakers with their scripts or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he said, I met this guy, Jeff Nichols. If you ever get a chance to work with him, you should definitely do it. And Jody's a very smart guy, so I started watching all Jeff's movies and thought that they were pretty brilliant. And then, you know, an opportunity came up from, there was a casting director at Warner Brothers who I just worked on a movie called This Is Where I Leave You, and they were doing Jeff's next movie, and she suggested me to Jeff, and so Jeff gave me a call, and we just talked on the phone, and that was kind of it. Our relationship on set was, he's from Arkansas, and I have family that's in Arkansas. My father lives in
Arkansas.
So
it's an easy rapport.
Yeah. He's a very unassuming, intelligent, approachable, smart director. And you couldn't ask for a better environment. I mean, I've worked with a lot of great directors, as you said, who have a different vibe on set. And his is not necessarily better or worse. It's just different. And it's pretty collaborative. I mean, that's a generic word, but it's really great.
Each director, I presume, has a different way of working on the set.
For sure.
Right. So what are the things that all the great directors have in common?
Specificity, I'd say. They know, I mean, there's lots of things that they have in common. A knowledge of history, not to mention just the history of film, but history of the world at large.
So directors tend to be intellectually curious with lots of bandwidth.
Curious, yes. Curious about, very curious people. But their curiosity doesn't stop at like, oh, I'm interested. They actually do the work and spend hours kind of mining. They just know their history. I'm like trying to figure out a different way to say the same thing. They're aware of history. And they're also very specific about the story that they're telling. There's no detail that is not thought through, even things that seem kind of happenstance or by design.
Yeah. You know? And so on a Spielberg set or a Coen Brothers set, there's no ambiguity in their direction.
Yes, but that's not to say that there isn't room for them to be wrong, or to not necessarily wrong, but to try something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like Noah Baumbach, I think, is a great example
right.
of it, similar to the Coen brothers, where it's every word is it feels very much like a play, actually. It's this is the script. This is the text. We've thought through it. This we feel that these characters would say this, and it's we are, not we are. You know, it's to the letter, which I think is great. But in that, how to interpret those lines, there's immense freedom that they're open to, you know, making time in the schedule to find what that is. Other times, you know, like on Silence, there was other kind of more impulsive decisions that we were finding in the moment. Like Marty, when he gets to a set, likes to be in the set for a little bit before anything else is happening. He kind of takes in what's going on around it. He's not denying that, like, oh, there's a bird chirping. How do we figure out how to cut it out in post? He's like, let's figure out how to integrate in what's happening right now in set. Or if you come up with a better idea, just say it. We can always just edit around it.
Right.
Not that both are one's valid or one's invalid. There's just a different way of working. Soderbergh, I just did this movie for called Logan Lucky, and he does it in, like, you know, one or two takes. So you don't have a lot of time to think or overthink. It's all very impulsive, you know, and he is operating the camera. He's lighting it. So the pace of the set is also so much faster than other sets. And it just kind of exercises different muscles, and it forces you out of your sometimes I think it's a trap to go into, I guess this is doesn't apply just for actors, but for any job, with I have a set way of working and I'm going to impose it on everybody
right.
else. And to tie it back to our conversation with the military, I've learned that it's actually more interesting to not know what's going to happen and be prepared and be respectful for your other actors and the crew, but not being set in, like, I need these things to be able to do my job.
Right.
I feel like often when you get stuck in that, you're missing opportunities that you didn't think were available, you know, to you, and you become, I don't know, probably stale in your job, disrespectful to the other people
right.
who are there.
And you also, I guess, as an actor, if you did that, you would stop learning. And it would seem to me that learning
right.
is a big part of why people get better and love acting.
Yeah, no, it's paramount. Hopefully with acting you can do it for as long as you want, and along with working with, you know, in theater or in films, I've worked with a lot of amazing older actors who I've learned that lesson from early on. You know, like Diane Wiest is someone who comes to mind immediately, someone who has been doing it for so long, you know, but still, we did this play that was not very good, but she was very good, and I just remember this, watching her struggle with it, and being a young actor, watching someone who I think is a brilliant one go through that struggle, it just reminds you, all right, you never figure anything out.
Right.
Which is both great because you have a long time to practice it.
Right.
And bad because you're never satisfied.
It makes your craft simultaneously terrifying and thrilling.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, you bring a sort of realistic but bemused sense of humanity to most roles, which I think
is a very nice thing to say.
Thanks. Oh, well, it's true. I mean, because you have this ability to show strength and vulnerability in every role, including Star Wars.
Oh.
And I don't think that's all that common. And maybe that's why all these great directors want to work with you.
I don't know.
Yeah. You're just happy they call.
Yeah, right.
How important is it for you to be able to relate somehow to the character you're playing?
I don't know. I've definitely played characters that I don't initially relate to.
Mm-hmm.
But
then as the movie's being made or as the play is being
right.
developed, do you find connections that you didn't think you'd find initially?
Yeah, sometimes if it's abstract, like if you don't understand it initially, sometimes there's something abstract that happens that you find your character and everything makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, like, I mean, I guess to go to Noah again, where Baumbach, we did this movie While We're Young.
And I saw it.
And initially, thank you. Initially, I understood Josh's character more, so played by Ben Stiller. But then the costume designer Ann Roth came up with these great jackets Noah had a great initial impulse about, like, Eric Rohmer movies, and he gave me this image of Jamie kind of moves through water. Like, when he comes into a room, he kind of glides in, and then when he leaves, he glides out, and you don't really get a sense that he's stuck to the ground at all. And somehow through that and rehearsals and the first week of shooting, that unlocked something in me that I don't know how much that comes through in the movie, but for myself, suddenly it made sense to me about the character.
So you're in Logan Lucky. You've told us what Soderbergh, working with Soderbergh, is like. Can you really make a one-arm martini?
I can, yeah. I haven't done it in like since we shot that movie.
I wish we would have had like a setup here.
Yeah, well, I'm actually glad you didn't. Like, well, then prove it.
Because I once wrote a story. I wrote a whole book on pizza called "Pizza: A Slice of Heaven," and in the book, there's a story about a one-arm pizza maker.
Really?
In East Haven, Connecticut, a legendary guy named Paul. It was Paul's Pizza. Yeah. Paul's a pizza, and it was amazing to watch him make pizza with one hand. Mm. And so I really can't wait to see the movie because I really want to see you do this.
Yeah, I think that we have one that I don't know if I think in the movie it's all edited together, but we did do a couple that was all in one, which was fun.
You're in the next Star Wars film. You're in Logan Lucky. You're in the finally finished Terry Gilliam film,
yeah.
The man who killed Don Quixote.
Yeah.
Maybe you're the man who helped Terry Gilliam finish the movie.
I don't know. God, I hope.
That is an incredible body of work, and it must have been an intense time for you, like the last 2 years. Were you just working all the time?
Yeah, yeah. Now I'm taking a couple. I haven't really had this much time off, I think, since I went into school. Because it's always, even when I had the first job, I was doing this play called Slipping, rehearsing during the day, and then doing this other play called The Retributionists at night. It was always kind of doubling up on things, which is good. I'm not, you know, whatever. It was what it was. But I'm excited for a little time off.
What does the future hold for you in terms of what you're looking to do? You're an incredibly curious person. There must be lots of things you want to do.
Sure. I mean, I hopefully get to – I have a list in my mind of like really great directors that I'd love to work with.
Really? So give us three.
Michael Haneke, I think, is a brilliant director. Paul Thomas Anderson, I think, is a brilliant director.
Michael Haneke is the German?
Yeah.
Can you keep going?
Almodovar, I would say, is probably the top of my list. There's so many great people. Francis Ford Coppola, I think, is brilliant. George Lucas, I think, is pretty great. David Fincher, Paul Thomas Anderson, Michael Haneke, Pedro Almodovar.
The guy who did Dunkirk?
Dunkirk, Chris Nolan.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Got it.
People that I've worked with that I can't wait to work with again. Jeff Nichols, I think, is, you know, great. Noah.
So you're chilling at the moment.
Yeah.
After working nonstop for a couple of years. What do you do when you chill? Like, what do you do for fun? I've heard tell.
Yes.
That you mentioned cooking.
Yes. Yeah. Recently I've been cooking, which is open for debate of how fun it's been.
Well, it's, you know, good. It's not easy because you're learning a new craft.
It is. And it's I've been grilling a lot, which I really like. I like doing, and I actually realize that I like cooking better than I do baking, which I'm not very good at because they ask you to be more precise, and I like the kind of mess of cooking, I guess.
Yeah.
I've made meatloaf this morning. I made pancakes.
Meatloaf. We always give everyone a gift here who comes on special sauce. Here is Kenji's recipe for the Food Lab's All-American Meatloaf.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much.
All right. Now it's time for the special sauce all-you-can-answer buffet. And just rapid fire. There's no clock.
Is this about food?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's about food. So, who's at your last supper? No family allowed. It can be artists, poets, living or dead people, politicians, painters.
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates.
Yeah, he would be at my last supper.
All right, who else?
Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan. I like this. I like this table. You got two more.
Stanley Kubrick.
Stanley Kubrick. This is an awesome table.
And I would say probably what, Cy Twombly.
Cy Twombly. Oh, my God.
That's my last.
I like that. Yeah. What are you eating?
Meatloaf.
Meatloaf.
Yeah.
Straight up. Like
or
that.
Or hot dogs.
Or hot dogs.
Yeah.
Are you an all-beef hot dog or a hot man or a pork and beef? You're from the Midwest.
Yeah, all beef, I'd say.
Okay,
yeah.
All beef. You like garlicky hot dogs?
Sure.
Yeah. So what do you cook when there's not much in your house to eat?
Eggs. There's always eggs in our house.
There's always eggs. And didn't I read that you, at one point, you were eating a whole chicken every day for lunch?
I was, yeah, when I was in school. I was eating a whole chicken every day.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wait.
I don't know. I couldn't answer that. I put myself on this big physical regime coming right from the military that I thought was to challenge myself, and a whole chicken was part of it. One day I had a whole chicken and like a foot-long sub from Subway, and I'm like, this has got to stop.
All right. It's just been declared Adam Driver Day.
All right.
All over the world.
Okay.
What's happening on that day?
A lot of wind sprints.
The world is doing wind sprints?
Yeah, and then eating chili.
Okay.
And then just not doing anything for a while. Just kind of like maybe swimming in pools, a lot of swimming in pools.
Swimming in pools, eating chili and wind sprints.
Yeah, yeah, and finding stray dogs.
Finding stray dogs.
Building them houses and moving on.
Building them houses. I love Adam Driver Day. Yeah. We need Adam Driver Day.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your special sauce with us.
Thank you.
Adam Driver. Check out Adam and Logan Lucky, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, and the new Star Wars movie. And maybe, just maybe, Adam will invite me and Kenji over for a meatloaf dinner washed down with a one-handed martini.
Yeah, with some Pepto-Bismol.
So long, Serious Eaters. We'll see you next time.